Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine. It's episode 36. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at the Hollywood Reporter, it is Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Woohoo!
Hi, Jason.
So we should start, I think, with the with a new show that's premiering next week.
Ooh.
Which I know you are going to be very interested in watching, which is the NBA Finals starring the Golden State Warriors.
That is one of the best new show I think I've seen. Well, it's been amazing, right? I mean, it's
been a good show up to now, but this is
a good show.
This is going to be the last miniseries of the season. <for them. laughs>
I like how you're framing this in contextually. Yes, this is the last one, and this is like the Mad Men ending. You really want them to get it right.
I have a theory that in Game 7, Steph Curry is going to jump out a window or hijack a plane.
No, that should be LeBron jumping out a window.
Yeah, all right.
Out of despair.
That's good.
Yes, but we robbed him of that chance to...
And who are we kidding? There's no Game 7. Oh, burn, no. Cleveland. I am not a huge basketball fan, but I've been watching. I watched the conference finals, and, you know, because the Warriors, being that we are local Bay Area type people, even though this show, as we know, releases simultaneously internationally.
It does.
Because it has to. The TV Talk Machine has to do that.
It cannot be contained.
But local angle...
Yep.
Local angle. I watch local team. Very exciting. And they're an exciting team to watch on top of that. And so that's been a lot of fun because it's been a long time since I watched basketball on TV. And I've enjoyed it, although I do question, is it ESPN that has the coach who was fired last year as one of their three commentators?
Yeah.
That seems to me like not a really good fit. That the guy he knows the players,
Mark
but
Jackson.
Also Mark Jackson, but he also got fired. He got shown the door.
He did, but I think a couple of things. As a longtime Warriors fan and somebody who actually really likes Mark Jackson, liked him as a coach, he got them to where they needed to be at that time. And then Steve Kerr is, I think, a better tactician. So he's going to, you know, has clearly moved them to the NBA Finals, the next step.
But should he be calling the games?
I don't have a problem with it. I think he's been pretty fair. I think he's got really good insight into the team since he coached them. So that's good. And, you know, they have, you know, Jeff Van Gundy's the next coach, too. And he's actually from Martinez. So he's got some local
angle.
Local angle. Local man makes good. Mm-hmm. But I don't mind him. I actually prefer him over Gundy. So it's kind of annoying. But yeah, I'm a Mark Jackson fan. And this has really been tremendous for me, I think, doing the NBA playoffs, because dream come true with the Warriors. I'm a huge fan forever. And then to have them get this far, do so well, and be entertaining and be sort of in the national spotlight.
Yeah.
And it's just a validation that they're doing super well, and that
and they're not playing the game. I mean, the basketball, I think one of the reasons I got really turned off of NBA basketball was there was that period with the Knicks and the Pistons where it was like, we figured out a way to win, and that's by making a game unwatchable and awful.
Right.
But we'll grind it out and we'll win 68-66.
Right.
And, you know, yay. And the thing about the Warriors is they're fun to watch because they just shoot and are just crazy shooting team. And there's lots of scoring and there's lots of running and there's some good defense and there are a lot of offensive rebounds. And it's just, I would argue, you know, fundamentally exciting to watch whether you're in the local angle or not, and that those two things put together have made me, you know, happy that I've been able to watch them.
Well, I think that's true too of the Cavs. I think the Cavs are a really interesting team to watch, not only just because of LeBron, but by the way they play. They've got really talented players, and they play an exciting brand of basketball as well. But yeah, I think you're looking at. I mean, you can make the argument that LeBron James is the best player on the planet, and then, but you can probably make that for the reigning MVP, which is Steph Curry. But I think the backcourt for the Warriors is the really exciting part, and just the ability to just, as all the fans of the teams who the Warriors have ousted will attest, it is such, and I felt this when James Harden was nailing threes. It is such a dagger. When you either can't catch the team because they're pulling away, the Warriors, and they're just draining these threes from outer limits, and they just net, and it's just amazing. Or you think you have them beat, And then they make this comeback really quickly because they start dropping all these threes. And when the Warriors get on a run, it's really exciting to watch. So yeah. It is really good television. I did laugh because after my late night tweets when we beat the Rockets and got into the finals, I did all these tweets, super happy. And of course, my bosses all saw that and were like, "Hey," the next day, "Hey, how about a column?" So I created more work for me. And then, you know, those things are only just like, I mean, they're such homers. Like, the only way you can even write a column like that is to make a joke about it. And like I did, and just sort of say, you know what, this is going to be great television as long as the Cavaliers don't ruin it. So that was my column. That's up today. Yesterday, actually.
All right.
So, yes, NBA Finals. Super happy. I know that's anybody who's A, not a basketball fan, or B, apparently not a fan of the Warriors or the Cavs. They don't even care, but whatever.
So, enjoyable column. Totally unbiased.
Totally unbiased. It was very unbiased. I tried to actually make it, you know, some people didn't get the tongue-in-cheek part. I tried to make it so obvious that it was being a satire. But no one got it. Okay, whatever.
Okay, so the other piece that I noticed that you wrote this week is about, you wrote a review of Aquarius, but we already covered that.
Ugh, yeah.
Yeah, that's there. That's your, in case you missed it, it was about the Duggar family and 19 kids and counting. And I believe your headline was "More Lies and Counting."
More Lies and Counting from TLC. TLC is awful. They are an awful network, an awful channel. And as I said in there, there's no two ways around it. I mean, this is what they peddle in. And, you know, if it wasn't, Toddlers and Tiaras, and it was Here Comes Honey Boo Boo and all the awfulness in that show, which they canceled because there was, you know, convicted child molester, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, it's just awful. There's so much stuff. But my point was, this is a huge business yep. in this country. They're a big channel. And they don't have any blinders on. They actually know what they're doing, which is the thing that I'm trying to call them out on. You know that you're trading in the schlock, and you have to understand that when you do that, you're going to get bit in the ass sometimes, and they're doing it right now.
The mud is going to splatter back on you at
yeah.
some point.
And it's like, you know, you can't – and for the fact that they have not canceled the show yet, it's astonishing to me. It really is.
Well,
is it
– or I mean, I think the cynical part of me says, well, of course not, because what they really want to do is like say, yeah, well, we're pulling it for now, and we're taking it under advisement, and then they wait for things to die down, and then they just put it back on.
Yeah, I mean, they've tried that. I mean, other channels have certainly done that. Duck Dynasty
was what I was going to mention. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that's a classic move, right? And you see that with sports teams all the time. Oh, our guy just got spousal abuse. Let's just sit him out for a while. Yeah. And let's not let that go away. He'll go cancel, and then he'll batter again next year.
Local angle.
Another local angle.
Sorry, that 49ers yes. joke there. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, he's not the 49ers problem anymore. He's the Bears problem. But mm-hmm. they cut him. But yeah, I mean, this is a classic dodge where they hope the heat dies down. But to me, it's kind of astonishing. It's like okay, adults, smart adults, and executives who need to be held accountable are sitting in a room saying, you know what, the statute of limitations are up, and so he didn't actually get charged with molestation and incest. And the inquiry is not going to go forward. So, are we good?
Statute of limitations is just like innocence.
Right. Yes. Okay, are we good? We're good with that, right? We just let this go. And that's astonishing to me, especially yeah. the hypocritical part, you know, especially this is from the Bay Area. This family is extremely conservative and are spouting their morals.
Outspoken about gay marriage.
Oh,
and
yes. Uh-huh. The trans, you know, they're so worried about gay marriage corrupting the world, and it's not right, and that transgender people are
child predators,
which is like, wow, that's really rich coming from the fact that, you know, the call is coming from inside the house. I mean, that is crazy, right? Here's this guy out there preaching all this stuff, and he's just like, ugh, it's yeah. And he admits to it. That's the thing. just because he wasn't charged, he's already admitted his involvement. And the fact that they that the family, A, the father didn't report it for a year, and the you know, and he's a politician, shocker. And you know, there's so many bits to the story that are amazing. That the dad, when he was running for the Senate, said that you know you should get the death penalty for this, and so he would kill his own son basically if that had gone through. So I guess Josh lucked, as I said in the piece. Good thing for Josh that dad wasn't elected,
and that good old statute of limitations.
Yeah, but it's just the hypocrisy in the family is like, okay, now that's the ugly part of TLC saying, yeah, we know this is what they're doing. We know that this kind of this moral supremacy. Even though now it's been totally gutted and outed for this, you know, sham that it is, it reaches a certain kind of viewer, and you get a certain amount of millions of viewers. And the thing that I've learned from the emails that I've got, which is kind of, I mean, it is not surprising, but it is like people will tell me, "Oh, it's a youthful transgression." Oh, right, he was diddling around with his own sisters. That's a youthful transgression.
Well, you know, kids.
Right, and they always want to lower his age. You know, say, you know, he's only 12. No, he was 15 when it happened. People in this country, particularly minorities, get put in jail and charged for as an adult when they're 14. So he's 15, really? That's. I think he's grown up enough to know better.
I think this is our most controversial episode ever. We have sports. We have politics.
We're polarizing.
It's hot,
this one.
Hot takes. I was laughing. It's like, because the point is not necessarily even about these people. It's that TLC has built a business around them and around other people. And like you said, they you know, what do you expect is going to happen when you do this? I really laughed. In your story, you list some other shows on TLC, and it's like a Simpsons bit, except it's real. You say TLC is or was home to My 600-Pound Life, My Big Fat American Gypsy Wedding, America's Worst Tattoos. That's like right up there with Lead Paint, Delicious and Deadly. Breaking Amish, Gypsy Sisters, Hoarding, Buried Alive, Kate Plus Eight, four shows about little people, My Five Wives, My Strange Addiction, My Big Fat Fabulous Life, Sex Sent Me to the ER, Sister Wives, and a colossal collection of other crap.
Right?
TLC used to be the Learning Channel, by the way. Used to stand for the Learning Channel. Now it stands for nothing.
No, now we know it's the Lechery Channel. The terrible. Loser channel. The thing that kills me about it, I mean, that it's funny to hear all that. They are awful. it's one thing to have people who watch these shows and totally believe them, and then you deal with them through email. And I called them, you know, I usually don't respond to any email, and I never read comments. But like, this was bugging me. So there'd be stuff like, oh, you know, one guy actually said it was worse. I swear to God, he said it was worse that I called out Josh because that hurt him. And my calling him out in the column was more – it was inexcusable more so than the actual child molestation. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't even know where to start with you. You know, and then it's – so you can't – I can't deal with those people because they're almost like true believers. But what gets me is that probably a lot of people at TLC – don't like watch those shows. They don't condone them. They don't relate to anybody in the shows. They're just – it's just manipulating it. Mm. It's manipulating this circus for viewers and ratings. It's so cynical. So I just wanted to call them on it and say, yeah, this is what's going to happen. You know, and like any look – and I already did the thing on Honey Boo Boo. Like any look at Here Comes Honey Boo Boo is like, okay, this show and these people and this lifestyle, oh, what could possibly go wrong? And then, of course, it did. And they should have known that, and that's the part that gets me.
You left out of your list, My Husband's Not Gay.
Right.
Actual show.
Oh, my TLC. God. I'm so a little bad. Surprised that Discovery Channel and not TLC on June 13 is going to has a new show. It's a special, actually, called The Man with No Penis.
Okay.
Right? I'm stunned that it's
is
on
it a mystery?
Discovery.
Is it?
And not like what happened to it?
Yeah. Right?
I have no idea. But boy, I thought that was for sure going to be on TLC. I bet it's a special on Discovery. And if it does good ratings, it becomes a show on TLC called The Man with No Penis. Absolutely. You follow him around, find out what happened to that thing.
Yep. Should we move on?
Oh, I need a shower.
Like, yeah, so I know. This is seriously, for those who have survived this far.
It's a shower.
We got a little little Mad Men feedback from listeners.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, we did. Just a little bit.
Okay.
I think it's good to get this out. This is where we're gonna put Mad Men behind us after this. But that'll be good.
That is kind of sad.
Good for this. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. It is a moment.
I'm still talking to people on the street and friends about it, which is kind of interesting. Hmm. Yeah.
I think the reception's been pretty good to it in the grand scheme of things, compared to like when everybody freaked out about their, we got the explicit tag, when everybody lost their shit about The Sopranos. See, I checked the box this week,
good,
Tim.
Good for you. Yeah,
you got to do it. Everybody seems to be okay. I mean, some people are like, you can argue about what happened at the end, but everybody seems to like that. This seems to be like what you'd like the end of a show to do, which is people are talking about it and they're wondering about it, but I haven't sensed like a huge backlash, nor did people say it was kind of boring. Like, I feel like that it all, you know, in the end, this isn't something that Matt Weiner's going to look back on and be like, ugh. I think it's like, yeah, it was fine. It did what he wanted, and the reaction was pretty good.
I think the reaction has been great. And I think that, I mean, certainly from the critical end of it, I mean, there was some, and I wrote and talked about how we interpret that ending, whether it's cynical or not. And I think that Matt, when he went and talked about it in New York, I think he clearly came down on the side of what I wrote about, which is that it's not cynical. Of course I'm right. Right.
You win.
That's the only I win. Ha ha. You lose. Mm-hmm. I think that if you look at this, and I'm still putting it together as far as like the grand scheme of things, but I think this, as much as I loved The Sopranos ending, this is a better ending. And I think it's because he just sort of masterfully manipulated it just so that he could, I think, make it clear enough. And then so that he could then maybe like a little, he'll write something later probably to make it even more clear, but we'll be talking about it. But it also, because you, and we mentioned this before, because you leave the, you're just closing the window and the actual lives of these characters are essentially still going on, we're all free to make up stories that we want for our favorite characters. That's a great way to end it. Whereas the Sopranos, even though they did that, even though that's what David Chase's intention was, to say, okay, you don't see this Sopranos family anymore. They're going to go on about their lives. He created us, he blocked us from thinking about that. Because it was all, did Tony get killed or did he not get killed?
Right.
In the way that he handled it, which I loved it at the time, but I think that this is a much more deftly handled way to say, here's what happened. I think there was real honest change in Don for existential 7 years of this crisis. I think he reached a place at Esalen where he found it. And I think Matt Weiner definitely did that by saying, you know what? Look at how I constructed this time continuum. He was at Esalen longer than he was on the show. He was there for a week at minimum. But who knows? He could have stayed there longer. He could have stayed there like a month. And then he goes back to New York and he makes this ad, which is not cynical. He actually believes in the content of this ad. And then we're all free to say, hey, you know, like, you know, maybe he goes to Betty's funeral and he doesn't abandon his kids or let them go to Betty's brother. He takes care of them. We're free to have our own ending.
Yeah. Here's the feedback from our listening friends. Kevin in the 303
Ooh.
Says, I am in large agreement with your views on the Mad Men finale, but I have an issue with the Coke ad, not from the cynicism, but because it implies Don Revelation led to this iconic ad when the ad was the product of a moment of real inspiration from a real person at McCann, and the possibly apocryphal story may be an even better story of inspiration than Don's revelation on a cliff. I'm not sure which story, Don's or the quote-unquote real story, and he sends a link, we'll put it in the show notes, is more cynical. Mad Men has been contentious about not appropriating real ads or slogans through its 7 seasons. It's toasted being an exception. which made having Don come up with this ad at the very last moment of the series jarring. Carousel worked because it wasn't about the ad itself, but the pitch. It's Toasted worked while the slogan was appropriated. The story was ultimately about the process, and the writers steered away from real ads from that point forward. The cliff scene jump cut ad put the emphasis on the ad in a way Mad Men never had before. With some more distance from the finale, do you think it was a mistake to use such an iconic ad as the final moment of the show, Kevin, in the 303?
Wow, I think that's certainly well put. I know the backstory to that ad. Obviously, I had to do a lot of research on that when I was writing about it. And there's the weird part about this is that there are certainly inconsistencies. You couldn't, you know, it started as a radio ad before it was on television, and then it became a song and all that stuff. But there is the link to it. I think we can draw the direct link. It's funny. It's like I had said prior to this that when you've created a show like this, you can end it any way you want to. You can change the rules if you want to. I think this is the second time he did It's Toasted and then the Coke ad. I think now it's not an anomaly. It almost throws out the old rule where they just, you know, they don't do that. Well, no, yeah, they do actually. We've shown that he can do it. It's his choice. I don't think that I would look back on it and think it was a bad choice, but I think that it was definitely more interesting to hear Matt Weiner explain in more detail about the ad and what it meant to him, which we didn't get in the series. So I'll give you that. Like Weiner said, he believes that Coke ad is maybe the greatest advertising ad ever. So the ad campaign, I should say. And because it did so much. And it was so innovative, and he pointed out that even just a few years prior to that, you couldn't even have this interracial mingling of people on the screen and all these things that were changed in that ad. But it's also how he validated the happier ending than the cynical ad, is he loves the ad so much because he thinks it's effective and it's not cynical, that the people who made it believed in the message, which is how I interpreted Don believing in the message based on what he learned at Esalen. And Weiner, to sort of say that same thing and to say, hey, this ad was a great ad and it doesn't mean it's cynical, and you could go back and make this ad and you could be rejuvenated about being an ad man in different ways. I get that we didn't get enough of that understanding prior, right? Because we are so far removed from – we're so far advanced in our – critical assessment of advertising as a concept, and we are taught, I think, in Mad Men to look at a lot of advertising as cynicism, cynical. We're selling a product. You know, this is, you know, love is what guys like I did, you know, came up with to sell you stockings and all these things. So the whole thing has been that way. So to shift it at the end to say that advertising can be a good thing, and that it's just I believe it, but I don't think he had enough time to set it up. So although I think it was still effective, I wouldn't say no, it was a negative. I wouldn't have done it that way, but I would say based on the compressed time to actually close out a series, which I said before is the hardest thing in the world to do, maybe he didn't give us enough material to go by about that ad. You know, because we could look at that ad, Jason, and say, oh, it's so corny and, you know, let's teach the world to sing and everybody's coming together and it's so 60s, 70s, like, you know, we are the world. Well, we did that later. Are the world.
That's our fault.
But I mean, and maybe that's the thing that he's getting at. You know, every generation comes up with this hopeful part. You know, do they know it's Christmas, right? Like, we all want to help at some point when it's not cynical. Later, we'll look at it and like, oh, super groups. Oh, God. No, don't put Sting and Bono in the same room. But that's just our jaded nature coming to the forefront. But I think what he was saying was that this was a good thing, that this ad was really good. And it was influential in the culture. So,
well, there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas. Do they know it's Christmas, man?
But you know what, man? Back in the time, I know you were singing.
So my daughter just had her last middle school chorus concert, and they sang "We Are the World" at the end, and I'm like, oh my god! And then I also realized that that my wife was her age when that came out. So it's like it all comes back around. Everybody has to sing along to something like that eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they probably did it, and they are probably totally believing it. Whereas you were like,
I think a lack of of cynicism at times is a good thing to have.
I think so too. I wish I had more of it.
So thanks to Kevin in the 303. That's Colorado, by the way. 303.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I wish I had more of it. Thanks, TLC.
Yeah.
Thanks for ruining my life.
Yeah.
With your stupid shows. Awfulness. Stupid shows.
The Man with No Penis coming to TLC in June.
Oh, God. We need to move on.
P. Page.
Oh, yeah.
P. Page. OG P. Page says, thanks for the insightful Mad Men conversation. Regarding television characters drinking, this was our theoretical, hypothetical
yes.
Argument last week. Uh-huh. I would have liked to have seen how Tyrion Lannister would have reacted to Roger Sterling's zingers about dwarfs.
Oh. Well,
there would have been a big fight, is the answer. Or either that, or it would have been like that scene in Elf. With Peter Dinklage. He's an angry elf.
Yes.
And then he punches Will Ferrell. Ryan from the Five and Dime in the Four and Quarter. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Four and Quarter. Where's the Four and Quarter, do you think?
Where's 414? Colorado?
No, 425, right? So, Washington.
Right. I'm thinking of it as a four quarter. Okay. Oh. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe it is 4 1/4. I assumed it's 425 and it's Seattle. So Ryan from the Five and Dime, though, originating from your area code. For the past few years, I have known, or perhaps quote unquote known, that the Falling Man in the Mad Men credits is a minor character who is supposed to jump at the end of season one. I think it was Fred Rumson, or less likely Sal. I'm pretty sure that you revealed this after you talked to Matt Weiner, I think at a death march with cocktails between 2008 and 2010. Have you forgotten, or should I cut back on the crack smoking? Ryan from the Five and Dime.
Oh, Ryan, I was searching for that exact reference earlier. I did forget. And if you know what? I still forget because I just Googled it and I couldn't find it. So it's entirely possible that he maybe heard that on old TVTM, which is kind of interesting. That would mean that somewhere
– there was information in the old TVTM?
And not only that, like a really big important nugget that I didn't ever turned into an actual story that could be documented on the internet, which is Matt Weiner tells me, no one's going to fall out a window. That was just the thing we thought of and then it never happened. Boy, I could have really solved a lot of problems.
If somebody out there wants to find where this happened, if Teacher Tim in Alameda, who may have retired and moved from Alameda in the intervening time, but he was the official archivist of the original TVTM, if he's still out there, if somebody does know where Matt Weiner said that to Tim, let us know.
I imagine that Teacher Tim grew this enormous beard while he was listening to all the nonsense, like hours of nonsense.
He had to delete it all because it was ruining his life.
He had to. Like, he had to burn it all down. Yeah. Like, burn the tapes. Really.
Yeah.
There's just... Yeah, and that nugget may be gone. It's a great story if it's actually true, and it's hilarious that, of course, and it's very true that I would not have remembered it. That's just like me.
So, we've reached the end of this episode. It's a little shorter than usual. We're gonna pre-tape something for next week because you're gonna be traveling. Are you gonna be in Austin or Banff next Friday? Austin first.
Austin first, and so yeah, the Friday I'll actually be in Austin for the first one. Yeah, I will be eating tacos.
Okay.
And queso, and I'm drinking beer. That's what she just imagined me beer, on that Friday.
The beer and the barbecue in Austin, so good. And the live music, God. So
I'm
good.
I'm going to be enormous. Like this is a week of not being able to work out at all. And I I'm not getting a great running start into it. So yeah, by the time I get to Banff, I may be as big as Canada.
So you should go downtown in Austin. There's a bar called The Ginger Man.
Mm-hmm.
Really great beer selection. Lots of really great stuff. You should duck in there at some point if you want to have a beverage, because I went the last time I was there. Really good bar.
Okay, Ginger Man.
Man.
And I'm technically a ginger, I guess. So
and it's sure. And it's right there, right downtown.
Okay.
It's on Lavaca, I think. So right downtown.
All right.
A little Austin knowledge for you. So we will wrap it up for this edition of the TV Talk Machine, but Tim will be back next week with some bonus stuff that we're going to just behind the scenes going to record now. But you will hear it later. Bonus material, bonus track. So until then, Tim, it's been a pleasure as always.
Jason, always a pleasure.
And you just said what I said in a different order.
Did.
That is the sign of a good writer. Mm-hmm. And we will see you next week. Goodbye, everybody.